Welcome, everybody. Parsha is Shlach this week. It is the year 5770. You shouldn't forget the code, how to get in. And for those of you who have not been here for the last 3 weeks, including now, since Shavuos, we are concluding a three-week series, God willing, today. The background to that is that before Shavuos we had been studying about faith and belief in God, and that was a detour from our annual theme, which is prayer. And after Shavuos was over, we wanted to get from faith back to prayer, and we weren't sure how to get there until we found a wonderful little sefer called Pathways, A Brief Introduction to the World of Torah.
It's out of print.
By Rabbi Shlomo Wolbe, and it's out of print, because all of my wonderful friends here in this class have been searching for it, and they haven't found it.
With one exception.
Oh?
Yes, we found it.
There's
a website called alibris.com. It's similar to Amazon, but it deals mainly in used books, and we found it there.
Oh!
And we got a copy.
Oh!
For how much?
$30-some.
Wow.
What is it?
It's well worth it.
Alibris. A-L-I-B-R-I-S.
Do they have other copies, or was that? Did they only have one available?
I don't know.
Anyone who would like to be the Schultz's best friend, please speak to them after class. But thank you. Wow, that's great to hear. Great to hear that.
Or you can auction it off.
Yeah. All right. Rabbi Wolbe was known, he's passed away now, but he was known as probably the world's expert in Musar during his time, being a disciple of Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz in the Mir Yeshiva. But Rabbi Wolbe combined a prolific secular education with his Torah, and he was born in Germany, educated in Germany and in Switzerland. Then he went to Eastern Europe to become a rabbi. So he had a wonderful combination of Torah and great insight in psychology and just everything human. Most of his life he spent teaching in yeshivas and on a high level for rabbis. But he did take the time to write a book, a short, brief book, addressing the needs of the general Jewish population. He was aware that a great movement was going on in the Jewish world towards teshuva, which means, colloquially, people coming to Judaism later in life. And he wanted to impart his teachings and his principles as a guide for these brothers and sisters of all of us, and us ourselves, to be able to make that journey into the Torah world. And I was struck when I opened this up to see that he divides it into three parts, this pathway. One is faith, one is mitzvahs, performance of commandments, and the third is avodah, divine worship. To me, avodah is prayer. So I said to myself, voila! Returning from faith to prayer. Perfect. So I said, we're going to spend 3 weeks outlining this sefer and gleaning certain, as much as we can in the short time that we have. And each week we will take one part. The first week we focused on pathways to faith. The second week we focused on mitzvahs, and the third week, which is today, God willing, we would focus on avodah, divine worship. Now, all the while, I was thinking that we're going to do prayer, because divine worship, avodah, is prayer. As our sages say, you know, on three pillars the world stands, on Torah study, avodah, which is typically understood to mean prayer, service or worship, and gemilus chasadim, and acts of kindness. But last week, when we were doing mitzvahs, we were surprised, because one of the items under mitzvos is prayer. Prayer, he has a section on the covenant and the signs, the mitzvos that are considered signs, like the Shabbos is a sign and the tefillin. He has a section on halacha, following Jewish procedures for all kinds of living systems. And then he has a section on living proximity to God, which he describes as prayer. And then living between man and man, and then Torah study. So, if prayer is part of mitzvahs, so what is avodah, divine worship? Is that something else? Is that something other than prayer? Indeed it is. So today, not only are we going to not speak about prayer, but we are going to discover a new meaning, a new definition of the term avodah. And that is going to be the third part of Pathways. And there was a very brief definition at the beginning of the book, a preface of the book, where he says, the literal meaning of avodah is service, but this concept too should not be taken in its common meaning of divine service, which arouses associations of choral songs and sermons. We translate it as, okay, ready? Here is the most basic definition of avodah in the terminology of Rabbi Wolbe. Working on self-improvement. Working on self-improvement.
Yes, sir.
Or as we say in the yeshiva world, working on oneself. Are you working on yourself? Mm-hmm. Avodah. Avodah literally means work. What kind of work? Working on self-improvement. Working on yourself. Where does that fit in the Torah? As a way of just touching upon the Parsha briefly, and I'll admit this is not a class on the Parsha, but perhaps we can make the following connection. The Parsha of Shalach contains the story, the infamous story of the 12 spies who went to the land of Israel, allegedly to strategize on how to come in and conquer the land, as we were meant to do, but instead it ended up undermining the entry into the land, because when the people heard their report, they became disheartened, they complained, they cried, and it was thus decreed that they would not be entering the land, at least not this generation. It would have to be another generation, and 40 years would have to elapse in the desert before the Israel could reach its destiny.
They would all die,
those that were at least 20 years old at the time. So I guess you can say safely that Parsha Shlach represents a failure of the Jewish people to reach its goal. Now, if we define Judaism and Torah as with only the first two elements of Rabbi Wolbe's presentation, let's say faith in God and mitzvahs, I think we would be left hanging as to why they didn't reach their goal. After all, they did have faith in God, accepted the Torah at Mount Sinai, and as far as we know, they kept all the mitzvahs, all the commandments that they were expected to do. I mean, some of the commandments weren't going to be enforced yet until they got into the land, but we don't know that they didn't keep Shabbos or these offerings or whatever they were expected to do. As far as we know, they did it. If all of Judaism is believing in God and His Torah and doing the mitzvos, what failure could there have been? Ah, there's a third part. There's avodah, working on oneself. There's something else. There's something beyond just belief in God and doing mitzvahs. There's something else. There's other kind of internal service, some kind of other occupation, if you will, that is crucial, that's part of the tripod. That's what we have to discover. Let's get out those notes again. And what I'll try to do is again, outline the points, and sometimes I feel I need to excerpt some of his words because they're inimitable, and even that doesn't do justice, but we'll do what we can. What are the elements of avodah? What is this avodah? Well, one idea of this avodah is working to raise oneself. We have a term, and actually, you know, I'm amazed because I think about some of the terminology that he throws around here, and these terms are just household terms. In, thank God, I will never reach the end of my gratitude for having been blessed with a Torah education. Thanks to my parents, thanks to Ribono Shel Olam, who has blessed me with this opportunity, continuing it into the adult years in the yeshiva experience. There are certain terms that we throw around that are household terms that we just take for granted, that these are deep concepts. For example, the term madrega. A madrega. What's a madrega? A level. I mean, literally, a madrega is a step. You're going upstairs, you're going up the steps. But we use the term madrega in a spiritual sense. Oh, he's on a high madrega. Or, I'm not on that madrega yet. We use this term. What is a madrega? It's a level. What's a level? Again, if we look at Torah as simply performance of deeds, you know, either you did it or you didn't do it. What's a madrega? Many of the mitzvos, especially the ones that are like mitzvos of the heart, come in many different sizes, many different levels. There's a mitzvah to fear God. What level of fear? Do I fear His wrath? Do I fear retribution? That's one level of fear of God. But there's a higher level of fear. There's reverence. There's awe. I have awe for my teachers. I don't fear that they're going to punish me. But I have awe for them. And we can have the same contrast within levels of fear of God. And the same thing is true with love. You can love, I love God because He takes care of me, or I love God because He is the creator. Different levels. There's levels of everything. There's levels of teshuva. There's levels of repentance. A person could think, have a fancy of returning and being a better Jew. Or a person can actually make those steps. And that's a higher level of teshuva. Either way, there's teshuva. A person makes one step closer, or a person makes 10 steps closer. These are madregos. These are different levels. There's different levels of what he calls devotion. Am I a devoted Jew? One level of being devoted is to hang around with wise people and holy people. Another level of devotion is cleaving to God Himself by emulating His attributes in myself. Just to illustrate how mitzvahs and Torah, which was created for human beings, is multifaceted and multi-leveled. So one aspect of avodah is trying to raise oneself within a certain mitzvah, within a certain precept, to go from level to level. That's one element of avodah. Just to read something from the book, 86 and 87, Those who think that the Torah is no more than a structure of laws and commandments are wrong. Within a firm framework, there is dynamic life, wherein everyone can find his ladder to heaven, to know one's particular approach by which to ascend heavenward is to know one's avoda in life. This is what we will now investigate. And you see, there's something beautiful about this concept of madrigos. Because if Torah was one size fits all, you either do or you don't, then that would be very discouraging for anyone to take it on. But if you say there are madrigos, then I can do Torah on my madriga, or on a lower madriga. I don't have to be on the madriga that somebody else is on. You know, Jacob had a dream of a ladder that's bottom reached the ground and top reached the heavens. Everybody could get on the ladder somewhere. So the fact that there are madrigas, number one, it means I can elevate myself within, and number two, it means I can fit somewhere. So it's a beautiful concept of madrigas. And of course, we always say it's better to do something than to do nothing, even if what we're doing is at a lower level. Okay, so that's the first idea. Actually, that's really his preface to the concept of avoda, of working on oneself. What follows are five other concepts, which are all clear and which all derive from this third idea of avoda. Shlemus, number one. What we said till now was really the preface to avoda. Shlemus. Shlemus means completion or perfection. And this is how we illustrate this concept. There are different kinds of mitzvos, right? There are mitzvos between man and man. There are mitzvos between man and God. There are mitzvos of study. There are mitzvos that we understand, mitzvos that we don't understand. There are a lot of different kinds of people in the world. Some people are very intellectual. Some people aren't. Some people are great with relationships. Some people are very shy. Some people are tactile. They love doing things with their hands, but they're not so into abstract things. Well, mitzvos have all different flavors to them. Some mitzvos require intellectualism. Some mitzvos require interpersonal relationships. Some mitzvos require understanding. Some mitzvos require faith and doing it without understanding. Well, what if I'm a kind of a person that certain kinds of mitzvos come easy and others don't? You ever think about that? What should I do? Avodah. I've got to work on myself. In other words, God wants us to be shlemim, shlemus, completeness, wholeness. He doesn't want us just to be one-sided. If you are an intellectual, that's great. That's your gift. But your job in life is not just to remain an intellectual. It's to become a shalem, to become perfected in the other areas that you're not strong in. In fact, we've discussed this before. This is a very well-known teaching of Rav Dessler, that the patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who underwent trials, he maintains that these trials were primarily to challenge them to take on new accomplishments in mitzvahs that were against their natural inclination. Abraham, it was easy for him to do kindness That was his nature, and so we think of Abraham as the chesed doer, the kindness doer, and yet he was challenged by all kinds of things, like going to war, and sending away his son because he was a bad influence, and the ultimate, taking his beloved son Isaac to the slaughter. All of these, circumcising himself, and in doing so, ostracizing all of his followers, which is exactly the opposite of his nature, which was to bring everyone close to God. So the idea of living through life, a life of Torah, is to challenge those areas where we're not naturally strong. That's a concept of avodah. You got to work on yourself. Let's read a little bit. Our particular nature and personality incline each of us to be selective in commandments. The will of God, however, is for us to fulfill all the commandments in an identical manner. Identical doesn't mean I do it like you. It means that we treat all mitzvos with importance and realize that they're all duties for us. Our approach to Torah must not depend only on our natures. We must not prefer one type of commandment at the expense of another. Avoiding this pitfall requires constant self-criticism combined with close scrutiny and study. This is what is meant by avoda. Its goal is the fulfillment of all the mitzvos equally. Perfection. Shlemus. Okay? That's the first element of avoda. By the way, a thought popped into my head. In recent years, there's been popularized a certain theory in relationships called, this is not a particularly Jewish presentation, but I'm sure it is true according to Torah, but the concept of love languages. I don't know if you've ever read about it or heard lectures on it, but everybody has, just like we all speak a linguistic language, we also have a love language. Mm-hmm. that we accept love in a certain way. There are five primary languages that the experts talk about. Let's see if I can remember. Words of affirmation, gifts, acts of service, physical touch, and I always forget the last one on the list, quality time. And when these experts give lectures for couples, but it would be true in any relationship, they say, ask yourself, what is the other person's love language? And I'll bet you you're not sure. And not only I'll bet you're not sure, but I'll bet you've tried to express your love and have found that it hasn't been so effective. And you can't understand why. The reason is because you're trying to give love in your language. That may or may not be the other person's language. This is just an example of also working on ourselves and challenging us to do something not in the way that comes naturally and comes easy. I'm inclined to give gifts because I like getting gifts. But the other person doesn't particularly care for gifts. They would much rather me offer to help them do something, to accomplish a task, acts of service. But I never stopped to think about that because I was thinking what comes naturally to me. How come they don't like it when I give a gift? Anyways, so this is a far-reaching principle, but this is part of Torah. Okay. Next element of Avodah. Hisponenus, contemplation. Contemplation.
How do you spell that?
C-O-N-T. I couldn't resist. Hey, tough. Bays, vav, nun, vav, tough. He's bonenus. It really comes from two words. Bina, which is understanding, and bone, which is building. He's bonenus is something that we've talked about in this class before, particularly when we were focusing on the Mesilas Yesharim, the path of the just. The prophets, particularly as I think it was Isaiah, complained that the Jewish people don't contemplate enough. They don't think. They just do without thinking. They don't take time out to think, just to think. And Rabbi Wolbe says that if you don't contemplate in life, you're not going to work on yourself. Just to think about questions. Which of us is alert to his natural tendencies? Who feels that he isn't perfect in keeping the mitzvos? I learn and try to fulfill. What more is required? Contemplation. There is no spiritual growth without it. For example, we just talked about love languages. I never thought about it. Oh, my goodness. I'm living with a person for so many years. I never even thought about what might be their love language. It's a pretty big thing to miss. You can't get anywhere if you don't think. It's just like trying to go somewhere and not knowing the directions. If you don't think, you don't get anywhere. This is a Torah concept. This is a Torah necessity. You're not going to find it necessarily in any of the 613 commandments. But life is impossible without it. Jewish growth is impossible without it. And the reason why it's so important is because we are not animals and we're not robots. We're not just creatures that do things. We are creatures that have a deep mind, heart, and soul. And that cannot be cultivated just by doing things. Those are physical. The acts that we do are the physical manifestations of a whole buildup of an internal side. What Rabbi will be another term that we throw around a lot, pnimius, internalness, inside of us. What's going on inside of us? We all have a world. Each one is a world. Each person is a world unto him or herself. That needs to be cultivated. That process of cultivation starts and ends with hisponenus, with contemplation. It doesn't end with contemplation because the goal of contemplation is to put into practice. But without it, it won't happen. It's a great time for hisponenus? When you make a bracha. When you make a bracha, you stop and you think about what it is that we're about to experience, whether it's a mitzvah, whether it's a pleasure, and we thank God and we just think about what it is, what the gift that we've just received. The sages say we should make 100 brachas a day. What's that, 100, one a day? It's like vitamins. 100 brachas a day is our recommended daily intake. And each one is a 10-second or 20-second opportunity for hisponenus. That is our nutrition. What do I read to you from this? Ooh. All right, let's go to the end here. Contemplation awakens love for higher knowledge. And if man includes personal introspection in his contemplation, he begins to realize his true place. In other words, you can contemplate about that which is around us, but we should also contemplate on that which is inside of us. If we do that, then a person begins to realize his true place. I, the tiny being, before the infinite. No depressing thought. A person might say, well, if I think about that, I'm just going to be so depressed because I think of myself as nothing more than a gnat. That's what we're trying to catch here in this room. No depressing thought, however, is involved here. Rather, this little spark that I am, just now experienced love and awareness of higher knowledge. So it can be a very inspiring moment to sit and contemplate who we are compared to the grandeur of God in the creation. And then he says, technology is our biggest enemy to this. Technology can destroy a man. The pattern of modern living threatens the development of the personality. Anything but depth. Be superficial. That's what technology says to us. The soul is choked. It tries to protect itself. In the worst case, drugs, involvement in illusory utopias, the delusion of spiritual revelations, all with the aid of a corrupt technology. Or it chooses a so-called better method, such as yoga. Why fly off to distant shores? There's no healthier method than the way of Torah. Deed and contemplation, coupled with self-improvement and spiritual growth. Avodah.
What year was that?
1983.
I was
going to
ask the same thing.
Yeah, maybe there's some new ones. Now it's spun out even more.
Could you repeat that again? Yeah.
Which one?
Deed with contemplation.
There's no healthier method than the way of Torah. Deed and contemplation coupled with self-improvement and spiritual growth. So that is first aspect of Avodah is perfection, challenging the facets of Torah and also of ourselves that are not natural. We're not naturally inclined to become a complete person. And number two, utilizing the power of contemplation, which means you've got to set time for it. He says, I don't know if it's this chapter. He says a half an hour a day is needed for, he talks about Musar study, but really, even without the textual, it's the contemplation, it's the being alone and thinking. Okay, number three, divine providence, understanding God's way in the world. It's something that's not part of mitzvahs. It's just, how in the world do I relate to what goes on around me in this world? And is God really there? Why do things happen? And why do we have such extremes? Why do we have, on one hand, a world full of beauty, pleasure, and bliss, and in the same world, trouble, tragedies, and suffering? How do we make sense of this? So in this section, he introduces the concept of the two attributes of God. The attribute of chesed, kindness, and the attribute of din, of justice. Both are the clothing, the raiment of God's attributes. And, I mean, this is a deep topic, but ultimately, the Jew believes that both attributes of God are for the good, for the best of man, for the best of the world. And a Jew learns how to accept both with love. Okay? This is something that requires avodah. Working on self-improvement, working on accepting, working on becoming comfortable with this concept. Where does he summarize this in a way that we can grasp it? This is very much tied in to the concept of bitachon, of trust. The way we begin to grasp this concept is by realizing that the purpose of life is not to just enjoy ourselves. Here, this is how he explains it. This is how he explains it. What do you think? That we were put on this earth just to have a good time? What a sorry mistake. There is just one purpose for man and for the world. Self-improvement toward perfection. Avodah for Shlemus. These are the same terms that we were just talking about a few minutes ago. No man is born perfect. He must work to perfect himself. So the reason why God exercises these two attributes is because apparently these are the two attributes that one needs in order to grow to perfection. Think about raising a child. Well, how does the saying go? All work and no play, all play and no work. A child needs both kindness and justice in order to thrive and to grow. So God is the same with us. If we assume erroneously that the purpose of our existence in the life is just for the here and now, and it's just to enjoy ourselves, then we don't understand why there are so many things that get in the way of my personal happiness. But if we accept, which is the premise of faith, that we are here to do avodah, to work on ourselves, become more of a complete person, then we can understand why. Maybe not in the specifics. We don't understand why God is doing this, that, and the other thing at the particular time, but we understand that he does have these two attributes, and both of them are for the benefit of our growth and development. So that is a very important aspect of Avodah.
He has what two attributes? Giving good.
Chesed and din. Kindness and justice. If you try to raise a person with only kindness and do not hold him to a standard and there's no accountability, then he just disintegrates morally, ethically, doesn't perform, doesn't push himself. If you are all strict and accountability and no breaks and no incentives and no rewards along the way, then he will not develop with a good sense of self or a good attitude. So that's when we contemplate the notion of God's divine providence in the world, we have to just take these two suitcases and just tuck them under our arm and say, whatever God does in the world, it's going to be either chesed or it's going to be din. It's either going to be his attribute of mercy or kindness and his attribute of justice. And that is just the beginning of this part called divine providence, hashgacha pratis, which is the third element in avodah. Because it's avodah to accept this and to kind of change our thinking, the way that we were brought up. Remember, this is a book for people who were brought up with a different set of assumptions. Okay. Fear, I mentioned the word trust or bitachon, and in recognition of what he just said, it is, what is meant by trusting in God? According to what we have written, trust in God cannot be defined as a certainty that everything will always turn out well. Rather, it is a crystal clear recognition that whatever is decreed upon a person from heaven is for his own good, and that God is always with him. This is trust in God. Again, trust in God does not mean everything will be the way I think it should be. Trust in God means whatever happens is from God, and it's for the best, and he is with me. That's trust in God. Okay, again, part of divine providence and part of avodah. Okay, number four. Can I ask you please just to open up one of those doors? It's feels a little stuffy in here. Thank you. Just one. I don't know, maybe it's not turning on. Thanks. Okay, number four. How are we doing? Getting there. How does a Jew view the world around him? Because we can sit in this room and we can hear these words and we can say, yeah, 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 but the minute we step out of 5770 star, we are, and off onto the street, we are in a totally different world. How in the world do we adapt to the world and try to live by these principles? So he says there's two ways. The first way, some people do successfully, but it's not for everyone. And that is just to create isolated communities. Isolated communities. Create a Torah environment, religious neighborhoods, communities, villages, towns, cities. This method has proven very successful in Israel and in the diaspora. So if you live in Muncie, Lakewood, certain neighborhoods in Jerusalem, B'nai Brak, and other communities in Israel and here, you will find that this is going to be your bastion of faith, your community. And you won't really struggle that much with these principles because everyone's doing it. But that doesn't work for everyone. And it may ultimately not be the strongest method. The strongest method in a Jew dealing with the world is to be like Avraham. See, Avraham did not have a nice, safe Jewish community because he was the only one. He was called Avraham HaIvri. The word Ivri, commonly translated as Hebrew, comes from the word Aver, on the other side. What was he on the... On the other side of what? On the other side of everything else. Whatever there was in the world, he was on the other side. He was a loner. And a Jew, to some extent, has to be strong within his or herself and be able to stand on the other side of the world. Okay? That is a major part of Avodah.
A recent movie called The Solitary Man.
Yes?
Is in reference to that. The Solitary Man is about this Jewish guy who all bad things happen to him and he doesn't know how to handle it.
Uh-huh.
He's playing a tarot, not too
really?
Long
ago. Huh. Does that have a happy ending?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. At the end, there's a big storm out there and it's almost like God appearing in the world again.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that storm is going to be.
A second way, which is not like the isolated way, is to pit oneself against the world. The Torah is truth. A bit of truth can push aside a great deal of falsehood. The world is a challenge. The preparation for it must be an intense education, a wide-ranging knowledge of Torah, and the goal is to maintain the Torah without compromises within the world and with such a pride that others will be thereby influenced. This is the system of thought known as Torah im Derech Eretz, Torah combined with interaction with society. This way does not shirk temptation. In other words, we're not going to be able to avoid being exposed to things that could tempt us. Tempt us intellectually, tempt us morally, tempt us physically. We don't shirk them, but it challenges it. And if one is very strong, he can be successful. Obviously, it's clear that there's a danger involved in that. And that's why it takes tremendous avodah to live in the world and still be strong Jewishly. But anyways, that is part of avodah. He says that Avraham's, what was his secret? And I never thought of this as a connection, but in Ethics of the Fathers, chapter 5, I mean, I remember this Mishnah, but I never thought of it as kind of Avraham's secret to success in being on the other side of the world, so to speak. But it says in Pirkei Avos, in this edition, it's Mishnah 22, chapter 5, whoever has the following three traits is among the disciples of our forefather Avraham. Whoever has three different traits is among the disciples of the wicked Bilam. Anyways, Avraham had three traits. He had a good eye, which means that he was generous. He thought about others. He cared about others. He looked at others generously. Number two, he had a humble spirit. He was not trying to live luxuriously. He was not trying to be wealthy. He wasn't saying, well, if at least if I have to live by myself. Let me fortify myself with riches and comforts and build myself an ivory tower, a palatial ivory tower, and then I'll be able to be satisfied with my life in solitary. No. Part of his life in solitary is not pursuing the luxuries of life. And three, he was a meek soul. He was humble as could be. He did not hold himself to be higher than anyone else. Those, says Rabbi Wolbe, those are his, not only are those Avram's attributes, but that is his secret formula for living successfully in the world as a Jew. You know, I can't, you know, read everything he says, but this is the way, fortifying ourselves in our faith and conduct, under no circumstances, allowing ourselves to be influenced from without. This must be the mode of education. Our delving into Torah and acquisition of faith must bring us to a state of, I am a nation, like a bastion. Rest assured, the pleasures of this world. Now, a person says, but how can I say no? There's so much good out there that's beckoning me. Rest assured, the pleasures of this world are illusory, described by attractive propaganda, augmented by provocative imagination. The actual pleasures themselves are empty delusions. A true pleasure is almost non-existent. Life is one mad rush after money, honor, luxuries, lusts, and on and on. The Torah wages war with the imagination. The imagination must not subjugate the man. The Torah is truth. The glitter of this world is sheer imagination. The truth draws a person near to reality. In this world, too, a substantial inheritance, acquisition of real treasures. The disciples of Abraham partake of this world. They are a nation brimming with joy. So if we take Abraham's approach, we will find true joy, and not what the outside world says, you need this if you want to be happy. That's a come on. That's imaginary. Such is the Torah way of living. In contrast, how pathetically meager is the fun life of the world around us. That is item number four in Avodah. Again, it takes a lot of work on self-improvement because that's not the way we were taught to think. And finally, something that is surprisingly maybe the most difficult of all, and yet people think of it as that it's so simple. You ever heard or seen bumper stickers, we want Mashiach now? Mm-hmm. You ever heard people say, oh, just Mashiach, just come. It's enough already. It takes tremendous work to yearn for the coming of the Mashiach and what we call redemption, Geula. Why? Because in the world as it is now, our main job is to take care of ourselves, is to do avodah, self-improvement, and that's our job. And we are supposed to be worrying about ourselves, taking care of ourselves spiritually and physically. The mindset of the days of the Mashiach is not to take care of myself. The mindset of the Mashiach time is to care only about one thing, the glory of Hashem. And that's very, very different than our mindset here. Our mindset here is to worry about ourselves, which it should be. That's a very big jump. If a person says, I want Mashiach now. Why? Because I want to see an end to all my suffering. Sorry, that's not what Mashiach is all about, ending your suffering. If you want to know what Mashiach is all about, try doing a mitzvah for no ulterior motive. Try caring, try giving up something that's near and dear to you because it's greater for the general glory of God. That's what Mashiach is all about. Not doing it for number one. What was I going to read on this one? Our heritage. No. Okay, not that one. Until the final redemption, the focal point is our avodah, the entire process to utilize our free will to choose a life of avodah, subsequently attaining divine reward. When the Messiah comes, the focus will shift to the revelation of God's true glory. Evil will no longer exist, and the choice of the good path will be inevitable. Every living being will see himself as one spark of God's glory. Okay? It's a different mindset. So how do we prepare for Mashiach? Well, we have to prepare for Mashiach by trying a little bit to get what's called avodah lishma. Work, serve God for his sake. And that's... it's a different experience. For the sake of your name, when we ask God for geula, for redemption, we say, for not for us, but for your name. Redemption is the revelation of his name and his glory in the world. Our preparation for it, to strive to reach the level of performing mitzvos for their own sake, lishma, unhindered by ulterior motives. This means we do not live for ourselves, or for our gratification, or even to receive reward in the world to come. Mm-hmm. Not even for that. Instead, we live to be a small spark of the revelation of God's glory through our every action, speech, and thought. From the first moment of our strivings to grow, our aim is to achieve this. Although the way our thoughts and deeds are still ingrained, along the way, our thoughts and deeds are still ingrained with egoistic drives, power, honor, and profit. And they have an overwhelming allure. Therefore, it's going to be unnatural to try to just uproot those. A man should study Torah and do mitzvos even if it's not lishma. Even though he is feeling that he's building himself up, he's improving, he's getting somewhere, maybe he'll even be honored in the eyes of people. He'll be an important member of the community. Maybe he'll be a rabbi. Fine. Do whatever it takes to do mitzvahs. But realize that what we're striving for is not the self. What we're striving for is lishma. To the extent that we have achieved a way of lishma in our avodah, for its sake, or for God's sake, shall we say, that is as close as we are to truly longing for the redemption. Lishma is the deepest and most exalted of all levels. So when we are asked, you know, it says, those of us who do not live to see the redemption in our in down here, as all the generations of Jews since the temple was destroyed, are asked when they get up to the heavenly court, did you anticipate the geula? Were you looking forward to the redemption? What that means is, did you practice? Did you attempt? Did you strive to live for God? And I don't know if it seems to you like an easy thing. It's not an easy thing. And that's okay. We're really here to work on ourselves. We are here for avodah, for personal work. But part of that work is to know that the ultimate goal is for God's sake. Perhaps maybe that was the shortcoming of the Jews in the desert. Maybe that's the only thing that was lacking. Maybe they had perfect faith in God. Maybe they had perfect performance of mitzvos. Maybe they even had perfect blend of personality traits in their performance of mitzvos. Maybe they spent time contemplating. Maybe they even knew all about the divine intervention and they knew how to face the world, but maybe they were a little bit lacking in that lishma. And so there was a little bit of hesitation of what's going to happen to us if we go into the promised land, instead of what is going to happen to the revelation of God's glory if we go into the land. Maybe that's what was needed. And because they lacked a little bit of lishma, they fell short of the goal. Who knows? Anyway, this concludes Rabbi Shlomo Wolbe's presentation of Torah to our generation. There's a lot to be said. There's a whole lot to digest here. But the fact that he took the time and the concentration to come up with an all-inclusive explanation, structure, outline of the Torah concepts is an unbelievable gift that he gave to us because he cared about our generation. Again, there is development in steps, in stages. First, we got to, first things first, we have to develop faith in God. We have to convince ourselves that this is something that we want to buy into, the concept, God and Torah. Then we have to get on the program and do mitzvahs. Nobody is asked to do something more than they can, but mitzvahs. You start to do them, then you start to live it. And then realizing that there's more to Torah than just doing things, believing and doing. Right? It's interesting. A lot of people think that the distinction between Judaism and, let's say, Christianity is that the Christians, they just believe. The Jews believe and do. And Rabbi Wolbe says, there's more. The Jews believe and do, and they also work on themselves. Avodah. So thank you, Rabbi Wolbe, and thank you to all of you for being on this pathway with me. And I guess next week we'll have to figure out how to jump over to prayer. But I don't think we're that far away. Any questions, please?
That's great.
Very nice.
Thank you. Very good. Just this week, I was listening, I think it was on NPR, and they were talking about the study this guy did, that the internet and books on the internet and all that is doing away with man's ability in his brain to concentrate on things. Now, it's something that has grown, but if we keep up with it, we're going to lose it. And it's going to take sitting down and spending time with a book or something like that and saying it, but people can't just sit and read books anymore because they don't have the mental capability of sitting and concentrating on one thing.
I heard the same program, and I was about to comment on it as well, but it's two-sided because the recent as Rabbi Wolbe says, technology can destroy contemplation, and this is what the internet is doing to our generation. But on the other hand, the same program said that the reading of books is only 500 years old. And man was, prior to that, distracted all the time, looking to his own defense. So we may be going through a cycle where we've enjoyed the pleasure of books and the contemplation it provides, but we're beginning in an era when we're going to lose that capability.
But I think man contemplated long before there were books. And now we don't even have the time for that because we're so busy multitasking.
Yeah.
Rabbi Wolbe writes on page 20, they in the part about contemplating the miracle of the Jewish people, they constantly clash with current trends, the Jews do. In the Middle Ages, there was universal ignorance. He says that Charlemagne was illiterate.
Really?
Only in recent times has school attendance for every child been instituted. And you say maybe perhaps before 500 years, people didn't read any books. But in the darkest Middle Ages, there was no Jewish child who could not read or write. We are people of the book. So we've always studied, we've always read, we've always exercised our intellect, the Torah study. Yes.
I must get back to
it. Please. Thank you so much for coming.
Wonderful class.
Thank you.
Again, it goes back to perception. And when you talk about Abraham and having a good eye and the way we want to see things. So I feel really blessed that I can make contact with my computer if I can't make it to certain classes, that we have the Tor Media Atlanta on there. What a gift this is, that this was not available, you know, and for people who are homebound or work or whatever.
For sure, but the trick is to keep it in balance. Yeah.
Nobody is saying that we should throw out our computers.
That all has to do with balance.
Get one.
No.
Rabbi Goldberger,
when
you said about
it's just like a telephone. Nobody would think of not having a telephone, yet we know that if you use it to speak Lashon Hara, then it's you know, being misused. Yeah. Go ahead.
Ivri and Aver.
Ivri and Aver, yeah.
Right, those begin with the letter Ayin?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so we know that that means to see, and then Avraham is with the Aleph and the Bet and the Resh. So the first three.
Avar and Avar.
Yes. So, and wow. Abraham
That's
is supposed
very
to be a metaphor for the sun. Uh-huh. And the sun, when you said about the separation, about the sun is really separated from all the other luminaries, because that's the only one that's visible during the day. And now you're talking about light, and the Jewish people are supposed to be the light among all the nations. And this is how we separate ourselves to hopefully... We're not going out and proselytizing, but what
right.
we do is we live in a world where we know there's this oneness and this one source, and hopefully what we become is a magnet for others to come in this direction, because we can't go pull anybody.
That's exactly right, and we wouldn't need to pull anybody. The Torah says that if we would just live the way we were supposed to live, the people would just be flocking to us and saying, what a wise people, what a smart people, let's go and hang around them. That's what it means to be a light unto the nations. Not to do anything actively. It's not necessary. We would be like a magnet.
Like a menorah.
A light unto nations. A lot of the things like the printing press and paper are not really that old. And so what did they do before?
Oh, they wrote, like we write a Torah scroll today. Ink, quill, parchment. That is as old as the
very,
Torah.
That would be very, very, very hard to do.
Well,
they didn't have a lot of it.
It happens to be that most of the Torah was taught orally.
Right.
And when God saw that the minds and the hearts were waning and couldn't contain all that information, well, guess what? He made sure that at the right time, somebody would discover the printing press. In other words, God manipulated technology to support our needs. And that's, by the way, that's true about the computers. Today, we need a computer. Today, if you want to find a source, you know, there used to be people that knew what it was in all of these books. Now, we have to do a search on the search engine, on the CD.
And it's fast.
And we need it. So God gave us what technology is a tool that God provides
that's
for us.
That's not what. Well, that's
no,
not what
he's
Walt
saying said. That it can. If we just become addicted to technology, then, like Hannah was saying, we have to know the balance.
Right.
Everything is a tool, but it can be misused.
Right. Beautiful class.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very deep.
Thank you. Very deep.
Very deep today.